This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
We're going to talk about the politicians' response to mass shootings. Susie Wiles giving interviews to Vanity Fair, Jerry Dunleavy, John Solomon. We are so packed tonight on I'm Right. Okay, before we get into some hard truths about the people who run the Western civilization now, I want to do something. We're passionate about it on the show. We always have been honoring the fallen. We just lost two National Guard soldiers in Syria. They were from Iowa. Obviously, they were from an Iowa National Guard unit. There was an ISIS attack, an ambush of some kind. We now have their names. You're looking at their pictures there. Sergeant William Nathaniel Howard and Sergeant Edgar Torres Tovar. Both of them are members of the 1st Squadron, 113th Cavalry Regiment of the Iowa National Guard. And I want you, please, if you would not mind, please take a moment and say a prayer for their families. It is, what is the date today? December 16th. Yeah, December 16th. It's 9 days before Christmas. 9 days before Christmas, and there are families now. Christmas is not going to be a wonderful time for them this year. Please say a prayer for God's comfort for them. They need it. Rest in peace, warriors. All right? All right. So, I want to talk about you and me. Because I want to be hopeful, and I am hopeful in a lot of ways about the future of the country, civilization, things like that. There are a lot of things to be hopeful about, a lot of things to not be hopeful about. But hope can be bad if you're placing hope in the wrong things, right? Hope can be bad if you're placing it somewhere where it shouldn't be. So when we think about the evil people, the evil communists who now run Western civilization, they do so much horrible, demonic, evil stuff. It can be common. I know I have done this. I'm sure you probably have as well. It could be a common way of thinking to think to yourself, at some point they'll stop, right? At some point, something so bad will happen. Tragedy will be so great that they will set aside their terrible ways and they will come around and be, just even for a moment, a sane human being, a normal human being. Yes, they're corrupt and bad, and we got all that, but at some point, they'll stop, right? Well, you know about the Jews who just got slaughtered on a beach in Australia by a couple Muslims brought in by their government. You know about this. You know about the shooting at Brown University. You know that, well, now we all know that the Biden administration brought in 18,000 known or suspected terrorists into the United States of America. Now, why do politicians, the communists, why do they always, no matter what the circumstances, why do they talk like this after a mass shooting?
In Australia, you had one mass shooting 50 years ago, and they said, nope. We're not doing that anymore. That is normally how you would expect a society to respond when your children are at risk.
When they had a school shooting in Scotland or they had an incident in Australia, they simply made changes. They are just as free as we are. They still have gun ownership requirements, but they have made sure that they don't have these. And since they did those things, they don't have them. We are an outlier amongst nations in terms of what happens to our children. And I refuse to think that that's okay. It's simply not.
It's an epidemic that our great nation must solve. And how many lives will be shattered before we have the courage to do what Scotland did, what Australia did, what New Zealand did, what other great democracies do?
And let us be clear. It does not have to be this way, as our friends in Australia have demonstrated.
Why? Why? It can be confusing for people who still place some hope in those demons. What? I don't understand. It was the immigrants. They still have the gun laws, and it happened. Someone like you, a normal, decent person, probably tempted to respond with logic, facts, actual reasons. But that's childish. Sorry, I do it too. It's childish. It's naive. Let me give you an honest truth. If tomorrow morning you wake up, let's say your phone's buzzing, and you pick it up and you look, you're wiping the sleep out of your eyes, and you find out that an Islamic terrorist brought into this country by Democrats set off a nuclear weapon in Los Angeles and incinerated 5 million Americans, not a single Democrat politician in this country, Australia, Scotland, Ireland, anywhere, not a single communist politician would step out and claim that we should stop the mass importation of foreigners. In fact, every single one of them, top to bottom, they would find a way to blame it on you. The confusion, the reason you and I occasionally put our hope in the wrong place, is because we think we're dealing with bad when we're dealing with evil. We think we're dealing with a bank robber, made a couple mistakes, but you know, maybe the right rehabilitation program opens up his Bible, maybe he can turn his life around, right? We're not dealing with a bank robber who made too many mistakes. We're dealing with Lucifer himself. And Lucifer himself never, ever, 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 ever wakes up in the morning and says, man, might have took it too far yesterday. Man, there were some kids that got hurt. A lot of people died. You know what? I'm going to change. I'm going to do better. He never has that moment. Democrats don't have that moment. Please understand that communists have been called anti-humans many times throughout history because that's exactly what they are. As we've discussed before, there is no such thing as a human tragedy for someone who is anti-human. In the exact same way, there are no amounts of mosquitoes that could be killed that would ever make you sad at all because you hate mosquitoes. They bring nothing but misery to you. You despise their very existence. So if I told you today I killed one, I killed 100, I killed 100 billion, none of it would move you at all because you're anti-mosquito. These people know that mass Islamic immigration is a disaster. They know that gun laws don't work. They know all the things you're already telling them. They don't care. Everything is just viewed through the lens of how it aids or hampers the revolution. I want you to watch this little, I think it's like 15 seconds. I want you to watch this little video of Chuck Schumer. Tell me, is this a human being?
And of course, I'm going to say a few words about the terrible shooting in Sydney, Australia. Okay? So, and first, of course, as I always say, no matter what, go Bills. They beat the Patriots today. It's a big deal.
Maybe the best video I can show you is this. Do you want to see what an anti-human looks like? And you can listen to her words. This is Angie Craig. She's some lesbian running for Senate in Minnesota. You can listen to what she says. That's fine. But I want you to do me a favor. I want you to look at her eyes. I want you to look in her eyes the entire time and tell me, is this a human being stirred by the loss of human life? She's so sad. Had trouble sleeping last night. Or is this a soulless, demonic communist looking at a great opportunity to strip you of your firearms so she can hurt you very badly?
Cheryl and I are just devastated. Another act of senseless gun violence in this country. And we're the only nation in the world whose lawmakers don't seem to be willing to step forward and at least try to address this epidemic we have across our country. I am so saddened. I am just disgusted with my Republican colleagues and their lack of acknowledgement that these lives matter, their lack of acknowledgement that these Annunciation school children matter in our country, and that we can do something about it. It is time to ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines in our nation.
It's not a tragedy for her. It's an opportunity. And what is this deal? Why are they so obsessed with taking your guns away? Well, I've used this analogy before several times, so I'll use it again. I want you to think about something. I want you to imagine you begin training to climb Mount Everest. That's quite a thing, right? You're going to have to do a lot of climbing, a lot of fitness work, getting your body ready. It's going to take a lot of training. And you start climbing Mount Everest, and you've trained for a year, 2 years, 3 years. And you get 100 feet from the summit of Mount Everest, and all of a sudden this wall is put up in front of you, and you can't get by it. You can't get over it. You're so close to the summit, it's almost like you can touch it. You worked so hard, so long, but you just can't get there. That's how communists feel about you owning guns. They have infiltrated and infected every part of Western civilization, bringing their disgusting ways all throughout everything you and I care about. They've hurt so many people, but man, they want to hurt so many more. They have so many people they'd like to kill and imprison, but there is this wall in front of them. There is this one thing stopping them from reaching that summit, and that is you owning enough guns to kill them if they try. Don't take it from me. Grandma Vodka is about to retire after 8,000 years in D.C. She accomplished a lot for the communists. What's her biggest regret?
What's been your biggest disappointment?
My disappointment, I always have it, and I'll never give up on it, is guns. A four-letter word, guns. Guns. That children would be dying in a classroom, that families, just the saddest thing. But it's about two things. That politicians should think that their political survival is more important than the survival of children and families in our country. And that the gun industry, I'm not talking about lobbyists here, I'm talking about the gun industry with endless big money just deciding that they are going to have it their way at the cost of lives in our country so they can make a profit. And it's a global issue, too. I mean, you understand that guns are a border issue as well. They don't care. They just care about making money. So it's money and power, and kids pay the price, and families pay the price.
She certainly seems like she loses a lot of sleep over those kids, doesn't she? You could tell how deeply she felt about the children. No, of course not. The children are just a nice shield for what she really wants, what they all want. And there is no tragedy too great. There's no tragedy so great they'll stop the mass importation of foreigners. There's no tragedy too great that they will back off of grabbing your guns, because there's no such thing as human tragedy to anti-humans. You're not dealing with bad, you're dealing with evil. That may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We're going to talk to Senator Tommy Tuberville about maybe some things we should be doing. Before we get to that, let's talk about having a better 2026. What if 2026 could be the best year of your life? I'm telling you right now, if you start a male vitality stack or female vitality stack from Chalk, natural herbal supplements, 2026 is going to be full of blessings you never thought possible, because your mind is going to work better, you're going to have more energy, you're going to be in a better mood at work and at home, you just feel good, you feel younger. That's what it is. It's like the fountain of youth. Natural herbal supplements from my friends, the hardcore anti-communists at Chalk. Go to chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Well, the president does have the proverbial bully pulpit, being the president, and he has continued to say and accuse you of attaining U.S. citizenship illegally. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows I came to the United States at the age of 12, gained my citizenship at the age of 17, and I am an elected representative in the House of Congress, and so the House of Representatives in Congress. And so for me, you know, I look at it as a display of his ignorance, and I see it as a national embarrassment that he continues to say those kind of things, even though he does know what the truth is.
I didn't hear a denial. Maybe the coach did. Joining me now, Coach Tommy Tuberville, senator from the state of Alabama, but apparently he's moving on and moving up, and he's going to be the governor soon. All right, Senator, I heard a lot of things. Sorry, Coach, I apologize. Please don't chew me out. It's right before Christmas. I heard when she got here, I heard that she's elected to the House, but I did not hear a denial, Coach.
No, she's not going to deny. She knows she was wrong. And with all the things that are stirred up now back in her state, with all the Somalians, with all the fraud and stealing taxpayers' money, we're talking billions, somebody needs to pay the price, and it needs to go down to her because she knew something was going on. She might not have been behind it, but she was either neglecting the problem or for years promoting it. So at the end of the day, you know, we got huge problems with the Muslim community. Now, Jesse, there are some good ones here, but I will say this. If we have good people in this country that are Muslim, that are going by our laws and constitution, not going by Sharia law, they need to help us with people like Ilhan Omar. Help get them out of this country because they're a cancer.
Coach, from what I understand, you're working on that problem from the Senate. Not that I'm hopeful the other dorks in the Senate will help you with it, but what are you trying to do?
Well, we're just trying to bring out and speak out about something that, as you just said, not very popular up here to talk about publicly, but, you know, look at Europe. It was not very popular to talk about public there. Now Europe, most of the countries there are gone, and they've lost their streets, they lost their neighborhoods, and they're going to have to fight in the streets to get their country back, and that doesn't need to happen here. So I'm going to speak out. I'm going to try to encourage other people to speak out. Let's talk the truth. Let's tell people what's going on. If we don't do it, you know, we're going to pay the price. And next year, Jesse, we got 365 days of celebration all over the country for 250th birthday. We have the Olympics coming. We have the World Cup coming. We have college football, pro football, people everywhere. And just look what happened in Australia. It's coming to a theater near you. We had better prepared. I don't know whether we have enough security because Joe Biden, Barack Obama allowed all these people to come here, and it is an absolute mess.
Coach, can you help me understand something? I really help everybody understand something. What you just said about Europe is obvious to anybody who even half pays attention, and it saddens me. I don't cheer for that. It's awful. Now that the Islamists have taken over Europe, they're basically screwed without civil war conditions, which is the worst thing in the world. And we're watching it happen here, and yet most Republicans, or at least enough Republicans in D.C., don't feel the need to get on board with your efforts to help. Why? What am I missing? What are they afraid of? I don't understand. Can you help me understand?
Well, again, it goes back to people just afraid to lose a vote, I guess. I don't get involved in people's business. I just speak how I believe that senators and leaders of our country should speak. Speak out against the evils that are coming across our borders. Our number one job up here, Jesse, is to make sure that the people in this country are safe. And we're doing a very poor job of it. I accolades out to Pete Hegseth and Marco Rubio. They're doing a great job taking it to the cartel and the narco terrorists. But that's about it. I mean, at the end of the day, President Trump has put out pretty much a memo saying, hey, we have got to save this country. And they ran on it for this election, and we need to get behind him, and we need to support him, and quit worrying about your own damn election.
Speaking of President Trump and narco terrorists, here's what he said about fentanyl.
Today, I'm taking one more step to protect Americans from the scourge of deadly fentanyl flooding into our country. With this historic executive order I will sign today, we're formally classifying fentanyl as a weapon of mass destruction, which is what it is. No bomb does what this is doing. 200,000 to 300,000 people die every year that we know of. So we're formally classifying fentanyl as a weapon of mass destruction.
Well, Coach, that has to mean something, meaning that's almost sounds like a setup to me. Call me suspicious. President announces there's a press conference tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern time. About 48 hours before that, he classifies fentanyl as a weapon of mass destruction. Should I be reading something into that? I did go to community college.
Well, I think you're going to start seeing a bigger push even from the White House. President Trump is trying to solve all these problems around the world, and sometimes he doesn't want to step on the toes of people that might have some influence. But I think he's about had it also. If you go back and look what happened at Australia last week, the two young people that got killed up in Brown University, the two people from Iowa that will come back to Dover Air Force Base tomorrow, the National Guard people, two National Guard people killed in Washington, D.C. It is out of control, and politicians are responsible for it. Not President Trump. The politicians in D.C. are responsible for this, and we better start talking about it. But we're more worried more about health care, which we should be. But we can play ball at the same time and do other things. But for some reason, we don't do that up here.
Coach, I have to ask before you go. You're running for governor in the state of Alabama. Obviously, the state of Alabama is pretty pleased with you. They keep sending you to the Senate, but it's got to be uncomfortable for you in Tuscaloosa, right? You've got to get heckled. You're the Auburn football coach.
Well, I've been to some games over there. It's been quite a while since I was at Auburn, about 15 years. So a lot of people have forgotten about it. But I just love football. I love sports. And, you know, Alabama's playing in the playoffs this week. And it's not Auburn, but it's Alabama. So we're represented. I'll put it that way. But big week for college sports this week. But this NIL, you know, we need to get on that one day, Jesse. It is killing our sports, college sports, right and left. It's unfortunate.
How do you rein it in, Coach? Because everyone knows why it happened, right? We got too far one way, but now it's so far the other way. It's worse than the NFL now. You can't keep a player more than a year. It's freaking terrible.
Yeah, well, yeah, this is supposed to be about education, so you shouldn't be able to sell your talents to another team every year. There's some players that have transferred four or five times and have gotten up to 7 years of eligibility. I mean, you can't even come close to get an education. We've got to put some restrictions on the transfer portal. I'm all for them making money. The cat's out of the bag. So be it. Go and make all the money you want to make. But we can't allow them just to jump up and run for another $15,000, $20,000, whether they like the coach or didn't like the school or think they can get a little bit more money at another school. It's way out of control.
Yeah, it is. Coach, I appreciate you. Have a Merry Christmas, sir. All right. I know you're going to find this shocking, but the Clintons are corrupt. So is the FBI. We'll talk to Jerry Dunleavy about that in a moment. Before we talk about that, it is the Christmas season, and I have the perfect gift. Massa chips. Get a box of Massa chips. Get a bunch of different flavors. Wrap it up in your little Christmas packaging. Put it underneath the Christmas tree. I know it sounds unorthodox. Everyone loves chips, but people don't want to be fat and gross, and they don't want to feel disgusting and terrible. So why don't you give the best tasting chip in the world that has three ingredients for Christmas? Ho, ho, ho from Massa Chips. 25% off your first order at massachips.com/JesseTV. Let Santa be fat, not you. We'll be back.
We have never in the history of our country been in a situation where an adversary, a foreign power, is working so hard to influence the outcome of the election. And believe me, they're not doing it to get me elected. They're doing it to try to influence the election for Donald Trump.
Putin, wait. From everything I see, has no respect for this person.
Well, that's because he'd rather have a puppet as president of the United States.
No puppet.
And it's pretty clear.
You're the puppet.
It's pretty clear you won't admit
that
the Russians have engaged in cyber attacks against the United States of America, that you encouraged espionage against our people.
The gall on that woman, huh? Or what is it my Jewish friends would say? The chutzpah? I think I said that right. Joining me now, Jerry Dunleavy, chief investigative correspondent for Just the News. Okay, Jerry, apparently Hillary has a Russia problem of her own and has had one for some time. What's all this Uranium One business?
Yeah, so we just broke a story about the slow walking, the stalling, the stymieing of the FBI's investigation into Uranium One and the Clinton Foundation. So what happened with this was when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State and President Obama was in the White House, Uranium One was at that time a Canadian-based uranium mining company that did a lot of business in Canada, but also in the United States, and was in charge of mining and processing a lot of uranium. And a Russian state-backed and state-owned enterprise by the name of Rosatom sought to acquire Uranium One. Now, this is obviously, it would be crazy for the United States to agree to allow this transaction to happen because the United States relies heavily on uranium for our nuclear facility processing, et cetera, et cetera. But the Obama administration and the Committee for Foreign Investment in the United States, which included the then Clinton-run State Department, approved the sale of Uranium One to Russian interests, Russian state-backed interests. And this was at the same time that officials associated with Uranium One and also associated with Russia poured millions of dollars into the Clinton Foundation. Now, this is a pretty serious thing. This has actually done long-term damage, by the way, to our national security, because to this day, we are still reliant on Russian-sourced uranium, despite the fact that we are sending weapons to Ukraine to help them stave off the Russia's invasion of that country. We are, at the same time, reliant on Russia for uranium. And so all of this goes back to the Obama era, but what we broke a story on is how at the same time that the FBI was launching a sweeping and years-long investigation into Trump over allegations of colluding with Russia, at that exact same time, FBI agents that were trying to investigate the Clinton Foundation and Uranium One were being stonewalled and stymied the entire time.
Okay, let's focus on that exact part of it, if you don't mind, Jerry. Stonewalled by whom? I would normally say who, but I went to community college and everyone keeps yelling at me. Who's doing the stonewalling?
So based on the documents that we obtained in 2016, as the FBI was trying to wrap up and shut down its investigation into Hillary Clinton's private email server, and as they were trying to ramp up an investigation into Trump, there were agents at a few different field offices at the FBI that wanted to investigate the Clinton Foundation for all of this sort of foreign shadiness, including related to Uranium One. Then Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates, according to FBI witnesses, wanted to shut it down. And that's what she was quoted as saying. Then FBI Deputy Director Andy McCabe in 2016 required that any overt actions taken to investigate the Clinton Foundation had to be personally approved by him. And of course, he essentially didn't approve very many or any at all. And unfortunately, even once Trump was elected in November 2016, the slow walking by FBI and DOJ officials continued for many years. And this Clinton Foundation investigation was never treated in the same ballpark of seriousness as the Russia collusion investigation was in terms of backing from leadership, resources, anything like that. And essentially, after years of trying to get it off the ground and being stymied, it sort of petered out, it looks like, in the 2020 time period.
Okay, Jerry, I hate to even ask this question, and you may not know the answer, that's fine, but I think I probably already do. Let me guess, the statute of limitations has run out on a lot of these things, so now nobody can be legally held to account. Do I have that right?
Unfortunately, you You largely do. Of course, one thing to always point out is that, you know, if investigators can prove that actions have been continued to continue furthering the conspiracy, whether concealment or further acts in the conspiracy, that does extend the statute of limitations. And so I don't know what's out there or what elements of a conspiracy have been continued to be furthered. So I would never fully shut the door on the statute. However, from my vantage point, part of why the FBI was looking to slow walk this, especially in the 2016, 2017, and 2018 timeframes, is that Hillary Clinton left the State Department around 2013, and many of the statutes of limitations are like about 5 years. And so if you can push it out past that, delay it long enough, then you delay, and then once you're done delaying, well, the statute's passed, so what can we do? So it looks like that's at least part of what happened here. And the internal documents basically show that this delay was very successful in convincing people that basically the statute had passed. You had some FBI agents and DOJ officials who believed, hey, this conspiracy has continued. Emails have been deleted. Documents have been destroyed. You know, this conspiracy has been furthered, and so the statute's not up yet. But this debate, like you said, over the statute, essentially seems to have helped allow Hillary Clinton to get away, to escape without any real scrutiny. And I just always juxtapose that with the seriousness of the investigation into Trump, with a special counsel, and with it consuming American politics for like 2 or 3 years, while the Hillary Clinton investigations basically failed to even really get off the ground. And I think that was largely by design.
Wow, what a shock. All right, I want you to give me some good news, Jerry. Pete Hegseth, I've just been very impressed. Seems, obviously he's got a lot more work to do, but it seems like he's doing some good things inside the Pentagon, is he?
Well, what I can say, I went on a trip on the Secretary of War's plane down to Huntsville, Alabama, Rocket City, on Friday to, you know, ostensibly he was going there for the unveiling of the new sign at the future site of U.S. Space Command in Alabama. But what we really did on that trip is we visited Boeing. We visited the Army site that's now in charge of fires acquisition, so rockets and missiles, and we went to the Missile Defense Agency as well, all with Hegseth going there and meeting with those leaders. And what I can say, and what I've really been seeing lately, is there's a serious focus inside of this Pentagon to fix our broken inability to build ships anymore, our deep struggles to build basic weapons, and a serious stress about the importance of deterrence, deterring our enemies so that we don't have to get in wars to begin with. And look, fighting the Pentagon bureaucracy, even when you're the Secretary of War, that's a war in and of itself. But Hegseth is serious about it, and it looks like a lot of the leaders that he has are serious about it. We will see who wins the fight between the Secretary of War and the Pentagon bureaucracy, but I have seen that they are looking very, very serious about it. And of course, they seem to be very serious as well about getting answers and accountability related to what the military did wrong during the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan. So those two things do give me some hope. Obviously, we always have to wait and see how things go, but I will say they're stressing it a lot, and I feel like the Hegseth's team is pushing that down to everyone else. And then it's just a question of whether the Pentagon bureaucracy can be defeated or not.
Well, Godspeed to him and you. Have a Merry Christmas, Jerry. Okay, said I'll talk to you, brother. Appreciate it. All right. We have more. More FBI stuff with John Solomon, all that. Before we get to that, I want to talk to you about something. Money is obviously tight. You know a great way to save money and put your money where your morals are? Switch your cell phone service. When I tell you about switching to PureTalk, it really is the biggest no-brainer, because I'm not asking you to give anything up. Ah, but I have to have a good cell phone service. They're on the same towers. It's the exact same towers. But I like my phone. Keep your phone. But Jesse, I want a new phone. They have new phones, whatever you want. You'll pay less. You'll support a company that doesn't support Black Lives Matter. They support veterans. Their CEO did 2 tours in Vietnam. They hire Americans. Isn't that pleasant? Switch to PureTalk. There's no reason not to, and I know that's double negative. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, the FBI sucks. It's just a really bad situation over there. John Solomon has been exposing so much. Really appreciate his reporting. Founder of Just the News, John Solomon, joins me now. Okay, John, what is this now? The FBI knew they didn't have probable cause to raid Mar-a-Lago. Do I have that right?
You have it exactly right. Not only that, they were telling it to the Justice Department, the Biden Justice Department, but the Biden Justice Department didn't want to hear it. They wanted a raid. They wanted to embarrass President Trump. So the Fourth Amendment be damned. They went ahead and raided the president. But these documents show extraordinary uncomfortableness inside the FBI. And by the way, an FBI office that often was at loggerheads with President Trump. They were the Washington Field Office of FBI, the main office in D.C. They had been behind the Russia collusion story, some of the Ukraine impeachment stuff, the January 6th investigation. So they're no fan of Donald Trump. But even they realized there was not a legal basis. There wasn't probable cause. That's the legal basis for a search warrant to raid Mar-a-Lago. But they got overruled by their Justice Department handlers, who would eventually, this case would eventually be taken over by Jack Smith. So a pretty remarkable set of documents. I've been covering the FBI 35 years. I've never seen this level of objections being written down at the FBI saying, hey, DOJ shouldn't be doing this. It's pretty extraordinary.
John, can you give us some DOJ names? I have long believed, and you're welcome to correct me on this, that Merrick Garland is a big goober, but he was just kind of a figurehead, that it was the communists underneath him that were doing all the horrible stuff. Is that the case, though? Who's signing off on who at the DOJ? Who's doing this?
Well, you'll see a name repeatedly in the documents named Jay Bratt. He was the deputy director of the National Security Division, so the division that handles classified cases. He later becomes Jack Smith's deputy, so he punches his ticket up into a special prosecutor's case. And he's the guy that keeps telling the FBI. The FBI is saying, listen, there's no reason to raid Donald Trump. First off, there's not a legal cause to do it. But they're still cooperating with us. They give us access to the building. They want to accommodate us. We should keep trying to negotiate with them and get the documents that we think we're missing back. And the FBI writes back, but DOJ said they are not interested in making any accommodations to Donald Trump. So Jay Bratt is the guy who's cited in those sort of conversations. Now, why is that important? Why is that sort of in a significant event? Because it's the same division. It's the same Justice Department at the same time that's thumbing its nose at Donald Trump, not engaging in meaningful negotiations, wanting the shock and awe of a raid that would embarrass the president at his Florida home. It's the same Justice Department that's giving Joe Biden, who also has a classified documents problem, the absolute kid gloves treatment. Oh, we'll negotiate with you. We'll come over and search for you. We don't want to prosecute you. So you see in this set of documents here another really clear example of a dual system of justice. Joe Biden, a Democrat, treated entirely different than Donald Trump with almost similar circumstances. And just yesterday, we got new documents that showed us the same thing with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Donald Trump's pursued for Russia collusion. By the way, no evidence ever that there was Russia collusion between Trump and Vladimir Putin. But Hillary Clinton, they did have evidence at the FBI that there was a pay-to-play scheme to possibly give large donations to her foundation so that she would approve a transfer of American and Canadian uranium to Vladimir Putin's nuclear company. By the way, that transaction did go through, but the FBI wasn't allowed to pursue that very legitimate evidence that they had. So you see in just 48 hours, two big dumps of documents from the FBI to Congress, two very clear cases of Democrats being treated very differently than Republicans under similar circumstances.
John, I have to ask you about Arctic Frost. It was a big story, it seemed like, for about 24 hours, and then there's always a new scandal, and everyone forgets about it as someone chases this or that. But it's kind of a really, really big deal. What's going on with Arctic Frost?
It has been moved down to the investigation in Florida. So in Florida, the Miami U.S. Attorney's Office is sort of acting like a special prosecutor. They don't have the title. But they're going to take on the entire last decade of weaponization in government. From Jack Smith and the IRS back in 2014 when they were targeting conservatives through their tax exemptions, through Russia collusion, Ukraine impeachment, and then the Jack Smith investigations. Arctic Frost was one of those Jack Smith investigations. It was a dragnet. Essentially, without real cause, they were looking at hundreds of Republicans and Republican groups trying to find some evidence that they could hang a criminal case on, completely contrary to the notion of American law, that you have to have a clear predicate and a clear probable cause. And so that case is now ramping up. And I think today these documents are very important. Why? Because all of these alleged crimes that you see here, all of this potential violation of President Trump's civil liberties occur in Florida. It gives the Trump Justice Department now, Pam Bondi and Cash Patel, the very venue that they wanted to bring the grand conspiracy case, to treat the last decade of Democratic weaponization, including Arctic Frost, to do that now in Florida. And that's what is actually happening behind the scenes. Dozens of subpoenas have gone out to key players in Arctic Frost and in other investigations, and there is a true criminal case. And just think about this. You could see Democrats facing charges that they criminally violated the very civil liberties laws that the Democrats claim are at the heart of their party, at the heart of the civil rights movement. They will have now potentially been accused of violating those laws just to pursue Donald Trump and his followers.
John, what's the latest on the January 6th pipe bomber? That was a big bombshell story, and then that seems like it faded too. What's up?
I think in that case, it's a pretty what our eyes tell us is probably what it is, which is a young man, sort of a loner, maybe on the autistic spectrum scale, did this for some sort of thrill seeking, and the FBI was, at least in an earlier era, the Chris Wray era, incompetent enough, couldn't figure this out. Fresh eyes come in with Cash Patel and Dan Bongino. They figure it out pretty quickly. This gentleman's going to be prosecuted. But right now, all indications are that he was a lone actor. They're going to look to make sure that there was no inspiration, no family member, no radicalizer. But it could just be, as the FBI suggested in his press conference, this was a gentleman looking for some thrill, some recognition, some effort to be in the middle of some controversy, so we planted the pipe bombs. Now, we'll wait and see if that still checks out, but as of right now, as of the last 24 hours, when I last talked to law enforcement, that is the operating theory of the case, and we'll see if that changes. But he's moving his way towards trial. There's another hearing next week, and he's going to go through the prosecution and probably spend the rest of his life in prison.
Yeah. Thrill-seeking. I'm sure federal prison will be quite a thrill. Thank you, John. I appreciate it. Lighten the mood. Next. All right. It's time to lighten the mood. And it will never stop being funny to me how many communists get busted by James O'Keefe's undercover work. Either it's he's sending someone out or he's personally going himself. Everyone knows what he looks like, but for some reason it still catches all these guys off guard.
And because I was with a bunch of stupid white people.
Lawrence is his name?
Yeah, Lawrence, yeah.
Lawrence, what do you think of him?
I mean, he's just a sellout. He's like a coon.
Clarence Thomas?
The biggest coon of them all.
What do you think of Candace Owens?
Another coon.
Have you ever heard of the guy named, his name is James O'Keefe. Well, the thing is that I actually am James O'Keefe.
Are you really?
Yeah.
No, you're not.
No, I'm not. I'm not James O'Keefe.
No, you're not?
I am.
Really?
Yes. And you don't know that...
Oh, no, man down.
We call black people quote coons.
It's the running that got me. I'll see you tomorrow.